The 1912 election boiled down to a national referendum on the sort of progressivism America wanted, or at least the sort of progressivism it would get. The beleaguered incumbent, William Howard Taft, had never wanted to be president. His real dream, which he later accomplished, was to be Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. Taft meant it when he said he was the conservative in the race. He was a conservative liberal, among the last of a dying breed. He believed classical liberalism, or his fairly worldly version of it, needed to be defended against ideologues who would read their own will into the law. Today, the issues in the 1912 campaign seem narrow and distant. Wilson championed the new freedom, which included what he called the second struggle for emancipation, this time from the trusts and big corporations. Roosevelt campaigned on the new nationalism, which took a different view of corporations. Teddy, the famous trustbuster, had resigned himself to bigness and now believed the state should use the trusts for its own purposes rather than engage in an endless and fruitless battle to break them up. "The effort at prohibiting all combination has substantially failed," he explained. "The way out lies not in attempting to prevent such combinations, but in completely controlling them in the interest of the public welfare." Teddy's new nationalism was equal parts nationalism and socialism. "The new nationalism," Roosevelt proclaimed, "rightly maintains that every man holds his property subject to the general right of the community to regulate its use to whatever degree the public welfare may require it." This sort of rhetoric conjured fears among classical liberals, again increasingly called conservatives, that Teddy would ride roughshod over American liberties. "Where will it all end?" asked the liberal editor of the New York World about the rush to centralize government power. "Despotism? Caesarism?" Huey Long famously said, or allegedly famously said, that if fascism ever came to America, it would be called Americanism. It's interesting, then, that this is the name Teddy Roosevelt gave to his new ideology. Not everyone was blind to this distressing side of Roosevelt's personality. The America that Roosevelt dreamed of was always a sort of swollen Prussia, truculent without and regimented within, declared H.L. Mencken. Deriding Roosevelt as a Tammany Nietzsche who'd converted to the religion of militarists, Mencken scored him for stressing the duty of the citizen to the state, with a soft pedal upon the duty of the state to the citizen. In this context, Wilson was perceived as a somewhat more conservative candidate, because again, he was closer to 19th century laissez-faire liberalism. He promised to limit government's ability to centralize power by corralling industry into the same bed as the state. In a famous campaign speech at the New York Press Club, he proclaimed, "The history of liberty is the history of the limitation of government power." Alas, it is difficult to take his liberty-loving rhetoric too seriously. Just 2 weeks after his press club speech, Wilson returned to his progressive antipathy toward individualism. "While we are followers of Jefferson, there is one principle of Jefferson's which no longer can obtain in the practical politics of America. You know that it was Jefferson who said that the best government is that which does as little governing as possible. But that time is past. America is not now and cannot in the future be a place for unrestricted individual enterprise."